You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi's the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back, bi-week edition of Purple Friday. Tons of news to report on and back to help digest and break down all of it is Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. Matthew, we have trades, we have free agent signings, we have bi-week analysis. There's so much going on. How you doing today?
Man, I'm bored. We just don't have enough to talk about right now. And it's sad.
I think the Ravens need to make two or three more trades. Yeah, I think that's what would really cure the boredom. But Baltimore is sure on their way to what they think, and what I think as well, is another Super Bowl, you know, campaign for them. They are in the thick of things right now in the AFC. They are only, you know, in second place behind the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC North. But that might change once the Ravens get their hands on the Steelers in Week 8. But Matthew, the big story for Baltimore yesterday was the trade for pass rusher Yannick Ngakoue. And the Ravens, this kind of came out of nowhere. A lot of people were expecting Baltimore to make a move. I think with the pass rush and what they have shown over the last few weeks, that need kind of was minimized. But still, you can never have too many good pass rushers. And this move for me, it was a great one. Ngakoue is somebody who has 5 sacks on this young 2020 season through 6 games. He had them for the Minnesota Vikings and only spent 6 weeks there. Spent the first few years of his career in Jacksonville. Matthew, this trade was done with Baltimore giving up a 3rd and a 5th round pick for Ngakoue. What were your initial thoughts on the deal once it went down?
Well, I mean, you immediately think about what Minnesota paid for him, only a few weeks ago. And that was a 2nd round pick and a 5th round pick. So, you know, Baltimore, granted, they don't have 6 games with him, which is a bit of a shame, but they also paid significantly less. I mean, a 2nd round pick to a 3rd round pick, if you look at any of the draft trade charts, is a dramatic difference in pay there. So, you know, for Baltimore, it's a huge win for you. You get the guy that ultimately you've been wanting this entire time. You get him at a far better value, one that you feel a lot more comfortable with. And just like with the Marcus Peters trade last year, you got a guy that's kind of in the final year of his deal. You get a chance to maybe see how he does in your system before going ahead and giving him a long-term contract, if you want to give him a long-term contract. You know, it gives you flexibility. I think Baltimore, for the 2nd year in a row, did just about everything right on this one. And again, when you consider that Minnesota just paid significantly more, they're the huge winners of this trade for sure.
Yeah, and I think for Baltimore, they have, you know, a lot of work to do, but still, this is a 5-1 football team. And when you add a player with the talent levels that Ngakoue has, especially to a pass rush where they've shown up over the past few weeks, I think that this is a huge, huge formula for success for the Ravens. But I know a lot has been made about Ngakoue's ability to be a run defender. And I don't think you give up a 3rd and a 5th round pick for somebody who's just a situational pass rusher. The scheme of Minnesota is, I think, a little bit different than how Baltimore is going to use him. I think in the rushing game, Ngakoue was kind of asked to hold his gap so the linebackers could go and do everything. So it was less of go out there and be disruptive. It was hold your lane so someone else can be disruptive. How do you expect Baltimore to use Ngakoue in their system, Matthew?
Well, you know, I'm going to counter what you said, and I think they are going to use him primarily as a situational pass rusher. A, you want to keep his snaps down. You don't necessarily need to be having him tired out. You want him to be fresh when he gets on the field. And you've got a bunch of run stuffers already. You've got Calais Campbell, who's doing an excellent job on that front. You've got Matthew Judon, an outside linebacker. Interior-wise, you know, you just had Justin Madubuike get onto the field for the first time this last week, and he performed well. You've got Broderick Washington. You've got a handful of other guys as well. I don't think you necessarily need him stuffing the run. And more importantly, I think, again, like I had mentioned, You want him fresh. You want him going after the quarterback. You want him doing, you know, what he does best. Now, they will undoubtedly use him. They will go ahead and slide him in there in some early down situations, I'm sure. I think his best use is as a pass rusher, especially if you're able to combine him with Calais Campbell, as Jacksonville often did when they used both those guys to great effect. You kind of overload one side. An offensive line isn't going to be able to block both those guys at the same time. Or if they do, Matthew Judon's on the other side, creating havoc in his own right. Because, you know, as an offense, you're kind of overloading that one side to take care of those other two big guys in Campbell and Ngakoue. So I think it's, you know, it's great. I'm excited to see exactly how they use him. And hopefully, you know, Don Martindale is able to get away with more 4-5 man rushes without having to send blitzes from the secondary as often. And you're able to go ahead and kind of stack up that back end a little bit with your primary guys like Humphrey and Marcus Peters and Jimmy Smith, able to go ahead and use those guys maybe a little bit more effectively than you have been, you know, since you've been blitzing nearly 50% of the time.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. And I think that's why this trade, it just adds an extra level to how good it was for the Ravens, because they have so many guys who again, can do so many different things, very versatile. And so, yes, you don't necessarily have to have Ngakoue in there when I believe his run grade this year is around a 45. So not stellar, but you have run stuffers in there. The Ravens run defense has been phenomenal this year. And so you're able to keep Ngakoue, I don't think in a strictly third down role, but you're going to have him in there for hopefully, you know, 60, 70% of snaps, and he can go out there and do his thing. But I do believe, Matthew, this move was made with the Kansas City Chiefs right in their front windshield, looking straight at them. Because when these two teams meet in the playoffs, and I do believe it's a when as opposed to an if, the Ravens know now, after getting walloped by Kansas City in the third week of the 2020 season, they cannot send as many blitzes with as many guys as they did in that game, because Patrick Mahomes just picked that defense apart. And now with Ngakoue, you have somebody who can win one-on-one battles with offensive linemen. He can put quick pressure on Patrick Mahomes by himself, so you're able to drop more people back in coverage. Do you think this move maybe had an inkling of, yeah, we're getting ready for Kansas City on it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you also look at the Titans for that matter. Pittsburgh, you're going to play them twice. You're probably going to go ahead and see them in the playoffs as well, given this extended playoff format and the fact that they are currently in the lead of the AFC North. You know, so you got a bunch of teams that do really, really well when you blitz them. You've got quarterbacks that are either savvy veterans or just, you know, really adept at either getting away from pressure or being able to quickly release the football. And as Baltimore has had, as you mentioned, you know, some difficulty with guys like Patrick Mahomes. You send a lot of pressure. Ultimately, you're taking guys out of the secondary. And as great as Marlon Humphrey is, as great as Marcus Peters is, as great as these safeties are, you know, a really good quarterback is able to pick those things apart, as we've seen happen. I mean, even Philadelphia, for that matter, was able to start kind of get things moving there in the fourth quarter, specifically because Baltimore was sending that pressure and was leaving guys out in the island. There were those miscommunications. So I think absolutely you have a guy like Ngakoue and you're able to, you know, you're able to, like I had mentioned before, get away with more 4-5 man rushes, and you're able to keep 4, 5, 6 guys drop back into coverage and take away a lot of those throwing lanes while still getting after the quarterback. I think that speaks volumes about, again, a number of teams that Baltimore is going to be playing this year, especially in the playoffs. You look to that Tennessee Titans game last year, you know, obviously Derrick Henry is the big main focal point there, but Ryan Tannehill picked them apart last year, the limited times that he threw the football, and that's because they weren't able to get pressure. And when they did get pressure, it had to come from the secondary. It had to come from, you know, linebackers going ahead and dropping out of passing lanes in order to rush the quarterback. Again, a savvy quarterback, a guy with a good offensive line, a good run team. They're going to be able to pick that apart all day long, every day. So, I think this is absolutely a move with the playoffs in mind for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it'll pay dividends, you know, during the regular season, of course, but also when you get to the playoffs and, you know, everything is amped up in January. It's a whole new season in January in Baltimore, I think, with Ngakoue having, you know, his his final few games in Baltimore during the regular season, I do believe that, you know, he's going to be an impact player for them. And I think when you talk about impact player with Ngakoue, you have to look towards the future just a little bit, Matthew, because Ngakoue is in the last year of his deal. He will be a free agent at the end of this season. And that's big news, because so will the other guy who he will be playing opposite from on the defense, and that is Matthew Judon. So two pass rushers who are going to be commanding pretty big bucks will be on the free agent market. How do you see those two's free agencies playing out for Baltimore?
Well, I think if you're Baltimore, if you don't sign Yannick now or some point this season to a long-term extension, I think you go into free agency going, look, we're going to pay one of these guys and only one of these guys. So, you know, your next 10, 11 games are your audition. So figure it out. That being said, it's, you know, you give up two picks for Yannick. I doubt they're going to go ahead and let him leave in free agency. Ultimately, you're not going to get anything out of that. At most, you're hoping for a third round comp pick. So you don't necessarily want to get rid of him in that standpoint. I think the best case scenario is you sign Yannick to a long-term contract extension. He's the guy you've really been wanting in that spot all along. They've been remaking this defensive line now for the last year to hopefully bolster up the run defense. So you might not necessarily need an edge setter at the expense of a Matthew Judon who's looking for, you know, at the very least $17 million a year. I think the best case scenario is, yeah, you sign Yannick to a long-term deal. You pay him his money, you franchise tag Matthew Judon yet again, and then you trade him away for, you know, a third round pick would be great. That way it's just done and over with. You know what you're getting. You get that additional second or third round pick in the 2021 NFL draft, and you're not killing your cap space, though Baltimore does have the cap space to make that work. They could pay Yannick $20 million next year and pay Matthew Judon, you know, $17 million for a franchise tag. They've got the cap space as of right now. They're due to have $43.8 million next year, which is the sixth highest number. So if you're Baltimore, this might be a long-term play in terms of being able to move on from Matthew Judon while still getting something out of him. And you kind of use the season to go, look, what can you do for us? Are you worth that $20 million you want?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're going that tag and trade scenario for Matthew Judon, which I do like a lot, because if the sack numbers don't go up, obviously sacks aren't everything that go into what makes a pass rusher or even an outside linebacker for that matter good or not. People are going to pay for sacks, and Matthew Judon right now does not have those numbers, although he is the pressure king, or at least one of them, in the NFL. Hopefully that would mean the Ravens come to an agreement on an extension with Ronnie Stanley, because if that does not happen, that franchise tag most likely is going to go to him. So if Baltimore can secure an extension with Stanley, secure an extension with Ngakoue, then you could go out and tag and trade Judon and still get something out of him this season while having him playing in a Baltimore Ravens uniform. So a lot of uncertainty around those fronts, but what is for certain, at least after he passes his physical, is that Yannick Ngakoue will be a member of the Baltimore Ravens. We're going to head into our first break now, and when we get back, we're going to be talking a bit about some practice squad additions for the Ravens, as well as other trades the Ravens could potentially make before the deadline. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. We are back. Our second segment of Purple Friday here on Locked On Ravens is here. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still talking here with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. And Matthew, Yannick Ngakoue was not the only acquisition that Baltimore is set to make over the next few days here. Of course, these moves are pending physicals and workouts, but it is expected that the Ravens will sign wide receiver Dez Bryant to their practice squad. And now Dez Bryant made headlines back in August when he went in for a workout with the Ravens. Ultimately was not signed, but Baltimore, I think, kept him on the back burner for this exact moment. The Ravens are lacking playmakers on the offense, Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews, and even Nick Boyle, if you want to throw a third option out there, have been producing for Baltimore. But other than that, it has been nowhere to be found, that playmaking ability. Miles Boykin has been a disappointment. Willie Snead isn't up to par right now. Baltimore needs some playmaking, and they want to see if Dez Bryant can provide them with that. What was your whole take on this Dez Bryant move, assuming the workout goes through and he does sign to that practice squad, as is expected right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's more insurance than anything else. I mean, Dez isn't getting signed anywhere else as of right now. At least, you know, he hasn't been on anyone's major radar publicly. The guy hasn't played football in 3 years. I think that's a concern if you're Baltimore. And is, you know, good or bad as his workout was earlier this offseason, as good and or bad as his workout was today, this week, he's going to need a little time to kind of get up to speed. You want to see what he's able to do. Putting him on the practice squad allows you to toss him out there and practice here and there and see what you've really got out of him and what chemistry you can really go ahead and build with him if you're Lamar Jackson. So I think it's not necessarily a bad idea, but anyone that's kind of expecting Dez Bryant to come in here and be a, you know, 1,000-yard receiver all of a sudden, history is not exactly pointing that to be a favored thing here. So I would hold off on any real excitement when it comes to Dez Bryant, and let's just see what he's able to do from the practice squad, and let's see if he's even able to get elevated to the 53-man roster for that matter.
Yeah, and you know, you want to talk about some history here. On this show, we've had a history of talking about a certain wide receiver, and Matthew, I've tried my best to not bring his name up because it has been so many weeks since we've talked about this name, and I know you absolutely love talking about him potentially coming to the Baltimore Ravens, and that is wide receiver Antonio Brown. Now, Matthew, I just couldn't hold back the urge to ask you a question here about Brown because the speculation has popped up once again. Brown's suspension is going to be over after week 8, and Adam Schefter stirred the pot a little bit on the rumor mill by saying the Seattle Seahawks would be interested in making a push, but that they would not be alone. And so some people have speculated that that would be the Ravens, and we saw some Ravens defensive players posting some mysterious stuff about, you know, happy to see the best back in business. That was a tweet by LJ Fort. Marlon Humphrey said that all he sees on the Adam Schefter tweet was that they will not be alone. So the Ravens, the potential for Antonio Brown, you know, there's always potential, but in my eyes, Matthew, I just can't see it happening. There have been a certain number of players who in Baltimore have vouched for Brown, Lamar Jackson, his cousin Marquise Brown, even Calais Campbell vouched for him a bit yesterday. Do you see any possibility that the Ravens go after Antonio Brown once his suspension is lifted?
No, I mean, I understand why Ravens fans want that. I mean, Antonio Brown at his prime and in his best, fantastic player. I mean, arguably, and this is coming as a guy that doesn't like the Steelers, arguably the best wide receiver to ever play this game. That's the type of praise. Had Antonio Brown not done an Antonio Brown over the last little while, he certainly could have at the very least given Jerry Rice and the like a run for their money in terms of historic stats. So Antonio Brown makes a lot of sense on that side. But then you look at this team, you know, this is a Baltimore team that since the Ray Rice incident has been very careful about the guys they bring into this building. They do not like bringing in guys who have legal issues, certainly not ones who, you know, are accused of sexually assaulting a former trainer, not guys who are on video that they themselves recorded screaming and cursing in front of their kids and their baby mama in front of the cops. Certainly not a guy who, you know, had a felony arrest for assault and kidnapping, and I believe it was kidnapping, and like theft of stuff in terms of his moving company that came around. Certainly not a guy who threatened to punch the Raiders general manager. Certainly not a guy who maybe or maybe did not, depending on who you ask, purposefully go ahead and freeze his foot so that way he didn't have to practice. Especially not a guy, I mean, we can go on here for quite a while. Antonio Brown has a literal list of issues going on right now. You know, this is a guy that's been through like a half dozen lawyers because either he's not going to pay him or clearly something ain't working out. You know, his agent dropped him. Antonio Brown is just not the right fit from a mentality standpoint. This is a guy who his entire career, or at least the back half of his career, has all been all about him. And you just got rid of a guy in Earl Thomas who supposedly made it all about him, who supposedly didn't show up to practice all the time, who supposedly didn't show up to meetings all the time, who supposedly punched a player in practice because they didn't like what he was doing and he got angry over it. A guy who supposedly got was held at gunpoint, knife point by his wife. I mean, I don't know why you would go for a guy who has more going against him when you just got rid of, at the salary cap era of football, you got rid of a guy who cost you money in Earl Thomas. Why are you going to go out and go sign a guy who, again, this is like his fourth team in the last few years in Antonio Brown, because he cannot go ahead and stay out of the news for negative things? I don't understand why it makes any sense to any Ravens fan, given the way that they've handled their personnel issues over the last, decade, effectively.
I completely agree. Brown, yes, a phenomenal football player, but from an off-the-field perspective, I just don't think he's the right person for this Ravens team. And, you know, Matthew, the trade deadline has not come and go yet. This Ngakoue move that Baltimore made still comes with plenty of time left until the trade deadline. So instead of focusing on moves that probably won't happen for the Ravens, let's focus on moves for the Ravens, but from a trade perspective, and talk about some of those potential trades that you see Baltimore making as this trade deadline comes closer and closer. So on the offensive side of the ball, Matthew, for me, it has to be either a wide receiver, a tight end, or an interior offensive lineman. Who are some names that you would like Ravens fans to keep an eye on?
Well, man, one guy that I'm super interested in is Brandon Cooks. You know, I don't necessarily like him on the Texans. I don't think he quite fits the role that they need him to go ahead and be as DeAndre Hopkins' replacement. But in Baltimore, I mean, he would make a great addition opposite Marquise Brown. He's got the speed, clearly. He's a guy that can play physically when you need him to. He certainly has the stats behind him in terms of his history, so you know he can produce. You know he's a 1,000-yard wide receiver in the right offense. And, you know, for that matter, 367 yards, 2 touchdowns right now on 27 receptions in a Houston offense that is just not doing well for a variety of different reasons. You bring him in here to Baltimore. Granted, Baltimore, not exactly the best offense for a wide receiver either, but that's a guy that could fit a lot of the boxes personnel wise for Baltimore, as well as both the cap space issue and the draft capital issue. You got a team in Houston who just fired their general manager and their coach. They have effectively no picks in like the next three drafts because they've been buyers over the last few years. They want draft picks back. They might be willing to go, look, it's a lost season already. Clearly, let's just get rid of guys that are going to kill us on the cap. Let's get rid of guys that, you know, we can rebuild without, that aren't necessarily your primary guys. Brandon Cooks fits that billing as well for them. You know, granted, they paid, I believe, a second-round pick and a fourth-round pick. Excuse me, just a second-round pick. They got a fourth-round pick in exchange for him. So you go ahead and get him for maybe a third, let's just say. It's effectively a wash for Houston. You get rid of a guy who's going to kill you on the cap as early as next year. You free up some cash as well. If you're Baltimore, you get a guy, again, you know who's able to produce. You get a guy who, as of right now, has a base salary of $8 million for 2020. Granted, whenever you eventually trade for him, if you trade for him, that's going to be significantly less. So, you know, right around the $4 to $5 million mark. That's certainly within Baltimore's wheelhouse financially. You can go ahead and restructure some guys there. And then the next 3 years, he's making $12 million, $13 million, $14 million against the salary cap. And as I pointed out with, the Ngakoue trade, you've got the cap space to go ahead and eat that cost over the next 3 years if it works out. But you don't have any guaranteed money on any of those deals. So if you get him in here for a third round pick, he doesn't work out for a year or two, you can cut him. It's very much a wash for Baltimore as well. So Brandon Cooks is a guy that I would look for. Really any of the Texans wide receivers or tight ends for that matter make a lot of sense. If you're Baltimore, you need a tight end. That third tight end role, you could potentially push up to second. You move Nick Boyle down into more of a blocking role, which will help out your offensive line quite a bit. You put that second tight end in there to play opposite Mark Andrews. I think that would work out. Or you get a wide receiver that, again, can be your number two wide receiver, your third option in this pass offense behind Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews. And I think this offense then starts clicking a lot more. So if I'm Baltimore, Cooks is the guy I'm kind of looking for. I know Julio Jones is also a name that's been kind of tossed around. I don't really see how that makes a ton of sense for Atlanta or for Baltimore, that matter, in any regard. A name that I did kind of toss around earlier today, yesterday, was Michael Thomas from the Saints. There's a little funny business going on there. He's been suddenly injured quite a bit. I don't know how happy he is in New Orleans. Drew Brees potentially out of there as early as next year. Again, cap space issues that the Saints have, they could potentially use, especially if they're going to go into more of a rebuild in the following years, they could use the draft picks for him. But that might be too far out of Baltimore's range in terms of what they might be willing to spend draft capital-wise, but you're not going to get better than Michael Thomas.
Yeah, no, Baltimore, I certainly think, needs somebody else in the pass-catching department. And if they don't go that route, at least somebody who could come in and be maybe the right guard. Maybe the Ravens go out and sign Quentin Spain, who was the starter for Buffalo for a while and actually was playing decently well before being cut by them. So that could be an option. But Matthew, before we head into our final break, talking about the defensive side of the ball for Baltimore and potential trades, obviously I do not think Baltimore will be going after another pass rusher after the acquisition of Yannick Ngakoue. But could you see Baltimore maybe going after a defensive back?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, I think the Ngakoue trade was kind of their ability to bolster that secondary just because you're not going to be sending guys from it. You're not going to have to leave those guys on an island as often as you had prior to that trade when you needed to go ahead and blitz your safeties and your linebackers a little bit more often, and for that matter, your cornerbacks if you're Don Martindale. So I think that's the thing they're trying to do there. Plus, they've got some guys on the practice squad that I know they feel pretty confident in being able to step up. And realistically, even if you do go ahead and trade for a guy like that, let's just say that Tavon Young, you're willing to move on from him. Anthony Averett, you're willing to move on from him next year. You still ultimately, I mean, are you going to pay for this other guy, this new guy? Are you going to give him a long-term contract? Those are the guys that you're probably going to be the most interested in trading for. So I don't know. I don't think so. I wouldn't think that a cornerback is kind of in their purview right now, is in their is in their eye. But at the same time, last year we certainly saw it with Marcus Peters. Baltimore is not afraid to go up and go get a guy that makes sense for them. But they have a lot of money already kind of invested in that position, and it wouldn't make a ton of sense for them to go after a guy like Desmond King, who is going to cost them a small fortune as well.
Yeah, no, and I think for Baltimore, the Ngakoue move gives them so many options. You kind of mentioned that, where they don't have to go one-on-one in the defensive backfield. They can, keep some guys up at the line, but obviously this defense, their pride is blitzing. So I think they'll still do that, but they don't necessarily have to. And in situations where it's not working or it doesn't call for it, they can rush four or rush five and keep their secondary players, back and in coverage, which will hurt opposing quarterbacks. But we're going to head into our final break now. And when we get back, we'll be talking a bit about what we've liked so far from Baltimore through the first 6 weeks of the season and what we haven't. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Our final segment of this bye week edition of Purple Friday is here on Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Matthew Stevens. And Matthew, the Ravens are a 5-1 football team right now. They are in their bye week. And honestly, the record-wise, you can't ask for much more, but there certainly are a few things that Baltimore could improve upon as they have kind of been going about their bye week and as they start to prepare for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So let's first take a look at the offensive side of the ball, Matthew. What have you liked and what haven't you liked from the first 6 weeks on that side of the ball for Baltimore?
Man, I'll be honest with you. I haven't liked most of it. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to give you a thing that I have liked. They rank 26th in total yards. They rank 29th in first downs. They rank 17th in third down conversion percentage, 19th in red zone touchdown percentage, 24th in yards per drive, and 17th in points per drive, 20th in time of possession. nothing they're doing is working well. I think this is a team that's, you know, I wrote an article about it, the offensive woes and things they can do. But it really stems to this notion that, you know, they've gotten away from what they do well. And what they do well is pound the football. Just you load up the offensive line. You go ahead and load up blockers, and you just manhandle the team opposite you for the first half. And in the second half, things open up. Teams are coming down into the box. You're able to go ahead and throw over top of them. Those things start working. Right now, what we're seeing out of Baltimore is they're trying to become more of a pass-heavy offense. And they've kind of backed off of that a little bit last week against the Philadelphia Eagles. But, you know, largely speaking, this is still an offense that is trying to throw the football deep far too often. This is an offense that is trying to throw outside of the numbers far too often. And Lamar Jackson just isn't very good in those two areas right now. So in turn, you're seeing a lot of incompletions. You're seeing a lot of things not work out. And that's the issue. So, you know, Baltimore, as difficult as it is sometimes, and any fan that's been a fan of this team for quite some time knows, at least under John Harbaugh, this is a team that sometimes just beats their head against the wall, despite the door being wide open next to them. And you go, well, why just don't you walk in the front door instead of trying to beat through the bricks with your head? And they continue doing it anyway, despite everyone else being inside. And you go, all right, well, I guess the Ravens just like beating their head against the bricks and doing the thing that clearly isn't working. That's kind of been their offensive identity for the last decade. So do I expect much to change on that front? You know, I hope so, but I wouldn't necessarily hold my breath. But the next big thing in terms of the offense and kind of some of the issues that I'm seeing is just Lamar Jackson. And, you know, clearly reigning MVP, he clearly has the talent. We've all seen it. He's not really displaying it this year. And a lot of it is, I think he is trying to overcome what people have said about him. People said that he can't throw outside the numbers. So he's purposefully throwing outside the numbers to like double coverage. He's not reading defenses very well. So he's throwing it to defenders for that matter. He's trying to get things going on, and instead of running it himself, he's trying to force the ball down the field to either Mark Andrews or Marquise Brown. In turn, defenses, Cincinnati called it out to Jesse Bates, the safety, and Logan Wilson, the linebacker, both called out. We know who it's going to. It's going to Marquise Brown or it's going to Mark Andrews. You take those guys out of the game, he has no idea who he should be throwing to, and we're going to go ahead and make plays. You saw that in the second half against Cincinnati. You saw it a lot against Philadelphia. Teams are going to start doing that until Jackson proves that he can throw somewhere else, until those wide receivers and tight ends prove they can get open and make plays. Those things are going to happen. So it's just consistency. And again, Baltimore kind of beating their head against the wall and doing the things they don't do well, despite other things working out for them pretty fairly.
Yeah, I mean, the Baltimore offense right now, there's a lot they can improve upon. And I agree, they have to run the football better. But this goes, it all goes hand in hand within one another, right? The pass offense, if that's clicking, that opens up the run game because the defense will start to drop guys out of the box. And then vice versa with the run game, you know, you get that run game working. In the pass defense, you know, they'll start to creep up a little bit. They'll start to stack the box a little more, and then that opens up the pass game. So Baltimore, I think, if they can just, you know, go back to what they were doing last season and run a little bit more of RPO and complement each part of their offense, it will be so much better for the offense. But Matthew, finally here, let's talk about the defense, because this unit, and obviously it added Yannick Ngakoue yesterday, but it is impressed without Ngakoue through 6 weeks. I love what the run defense has done. The pass rush has come on. That secondary is still the secondary. What have you liked and what haven't you liked from the defense?
I've really liked the fact that, you know, this is typically an older defense last year. They brought in a lot of young guys this year. I mean, obviously their draft, you know, really pushed them in that direction. And they're getting those guys on the field and those guys are performing. And that's a huge thing. You know, this is a team that has, you know, really lived off of its defense over the years, and to a big degree they still do. So getting guys like Patrick Queen those necessary snaps early on and seeing him succeed, getting Deshaun Elliott on the field and seeing him both stay healthy and succeed, Justin Madubuike, as I mentioned earlier, getting him on the field and having him have a good game, those things are all huge huge, not only just to this season, but for the next few years. That means Baltimore isn't going to have to spend as much money bringing guys in. They can go ahead and focus on re-signing guys like Ronnie Stanley or Judon or Ngakoue, depending on who they want to go ahead and bring back. They're able to spend that money there rather than trying to bring in an additional safety. And Earl Thomas, they're going to pay, you know, $13, $14, $15 million for a year. A cornerback they're going to try to go ahead and pay a ton of money for, or another linebacker or another pass rusher. They're able to invest in the guys that are working, not trying to bring someone in. So that is something I've been very, very happy with this team. And then just their ability to get turnovers. You know, that has been over the years kind of a sore spot for Baltimore, where they've played well. They have that bend don't break mentality, but they're not getting turnovers. So in turn, you know, if the offense isn't clicking, if the offense isn't holding onto the ball a lot, you see that defense get tired. Them being able to turn around, get off the field relatively quickly by getting a forced fumble or an interception or turnover on downs in some instances, again, speaks volumes about how they're playing and is able to keep them fresher for longer over the course of the season, especially as this offense is kind of still trying to get its rhythm, trying to get its feet underneath of it. That has been a lifesaver in some of these games, just the overall dominance from a takeaway perspective that Baltimore's had. So two very, very big things there. Some inconsistencies I'd like to see go ahead and be improved, but with the addition of Ngakoue, that should do a lot to help Baltimore out and, you know, give Don Martindale, the defensive coordinator, a lot more flexibility with how he wants to scheme up his defense against various opponents. So, I think this defense is trending upwards, and they're already a top 10 unit. So huge things for this defense in the coming few weeks for sure.
Yeah, and again, it all goes hand in hand, and that's why I think the addition of Ngakoue is so huge, because you look at it, and him hopefully getting pressure on quarterbacks will, again, force more help from offensive, you know, skill position players too, like tight ends chipping at the line. Maybe you have guys bring more help over, and at the end of the day, who are you double-teaming on the Ravens' defensive line now? In pass situations, even in run situations, who are you double-teaming? There are going to be some talented guys getting one-on-ones in the pass game, and especially on the defensive line, and when you look at that, along with the Ravens' ability to blitz, I mean, yeah, this defense has been phenomenal so far, but it is only going to go up from here, in my opinion, especially with that addition. But Matthew, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And we will be talking Pittsburgh Steelers next week. It's a big game. Yannick Ngakoue will hopefully be ready. But this team right now, 5-1, and all things considered, in a decently good place.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned it. Ngakoue should be able to play. They made the trade Thursday. Given the kind of COVID rules, I believe it's 5 days, so should have him available for Wednesday's practice next week. So he should be able to get 3 practices in this defense ahead of that game, in addition to a full week of being able to study that playbook and get into the meeting rooms. He should be able to go ahead and play, even if it's not a ton of snaps in that first week. And we'll see, you know, did Baltimore go ahead and make the right trade or did they not?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I think this was the right trade. And Ngakoue wants to be in Baltimore. He's wanted to be in Baltimore. And I think it's just a match made in heaven. But that's all we have for you here today. When we get back on Monday, we'll be talking about more Ravens, as there is no game on Sunday for Baltimore. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you on Monday.